force told him, no, you have to take him into a Trump presidency. Because at the time, I believe, if I remember correctly, Trump had recently won the election, and that was around the time that Colbert stepped down. And then it was also interesting that Jon Stewart stepped down within months of Colbert stepping down, too.
Oh, I seem to remember it differently, but I guess we could.
I mean, maybe Jon Stewart left first. I just remember it was within a couple months of each other.
I remember I was a huge fan of David Letterman. I went to see his show a few times, and he ended in 2015. And
okay, that was a little year before the election.
Yeah, he was ready to go, so he just quit, and then they were looking for the next person, and it was going to be Colbert. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I saw that was the difference, the change from Conan and Jay and Dave, mm-hmm. to Jimmy and Jimmy and Colbert, Steve, those last three. Except actually, Jimmy Fallon is a little more genuine and real.
Sure.
But the other two are very kind of genuflecting to their milquetoast personalities. They don't have any like hard edges, or they're just a smooth marble that'll just slowly roll down the hall in whichever direction they're pushed. So that's, unfortunately, there's no grit in late night anymore, and I think that's a conscious decision on Lorne Michaels' part to remove any kind of agitation force that had been traditionally the place for late night people.
Right.
I do have to say at this time it's 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, and this show runs every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. this summer. And today I'm joined, as always, with in the live show, live in studio for a change, because it's much easier to do in the summertime. I'm joined by Becky with the good hair.
Hey, hey.
Where are you from originally?
I'm from Nairobi.
Oh.
Nairobi's in Kenya.
Yeah.
And I'm also
Mark Malone.
Mark is here, and I'm very much enjoying talking to you, Mark.
Yeah, likewise.
Thank you for coming. Now, let's go to where I was talking, what we were going to talk about before, which is a combination of people trying to determine world outcomes. It's called the World Economic Forum. It really exists. They work directly with the United Nations and the World Health Organization. There was a paper signed by the leader of the United Nations and Klaus Schwab, the leader of the World Economic Forum, to dramatically accelerate their Agenda 2030 program. Now, the Agenda 2030 means, basically, comes down to own nothing and be happy. Mm-hmm. These rich dummies want you to own nothing and be happy, because they see the world, they know the world is just one finite space, and they want more of the good stuff for themselves and their friends, and less for you. So they want you to eat bugs, and they want you to eat garbage food, And stuff made out of genetically modified and doused with chemicals food, and call it fake meat, and call it fun and interesting, what's that really called? Synthetic food. Mm-hmm. So they want you to eat synthetic food, and they want you to live in a tiny shoebox of space that's barely big enough for any kind of living, and they don't want you to have fun with friends or go to see movies or to have any kind of life at all, because that will take away from their fun in their space and the energy that they can use to have fun in their life. So these rich dummies think that they can force people to do things, but as a matter of fact, there's so much more of us than them that they are extremely afraid. Mm-hmm. And they have to do very difficult psychological manipulations in order to make you think that you are doing the right thing, to prevent yourself from actually seeing these rich dummies for what they are, and that is just like a little skeleton inside a velvet coat that's got nothing except death in its life. It's really afraid of falling to dust and just consumed with anger and aggression to everybody else, because it has no soul. That's what's inside these rich dummies. And as soon as you just understand that these people are just ridiculous people, then it'll be so much easier to to avoid any of their pointless programs. Mm-hmm. So some of these people, the World Economic Forum has been started by Henry Kissinger, who is the world's greatest living war criminal. That guy is still alive. Can you believe it? Yeah. God, how I hope he walks with two canes and is broken in half by his back and looks like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, because that guy has been the cause of so much terrible, terrible things in this world. God, he can't die soon enough. Mm-hmm. Kissinger started this with a protege, Klaus Schwab, in 1970, because what happens is, the way these people start things is, it has to be kept secret, because you can't have psychopaths running around broadcasting themselves in broad daylight, because they would be taken down. So the older psychopaths find the younger psychopaths and nurture them into under their wing. And that's what happened with Kissinger and Klaus Schwab. Klaus Schwab was the young little baby psychopath, and Henry Kissinger was the older kind of world-weary psychopath. But he knew that he had to keep his psychopath line going. So he started with Schwab to create this World Economic Forum and told him how to do all the psychopath things. And now Schwab is the old and dirty, used-up psychopath. And he's teaching his younger people how to do things. These people are alive, and they are in power right now in places around the world. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern is a former World Economic Forum member. So is the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Both of them went to the World Economic Forum school, basically. They went to school, which entails a meeting in Germany with people at the World Economic Forum, and also taking classes here at Harvard in Cambridge. And granted, look, Harvard's a big thing. There's lots of things going on there. By and large, Harvard is fantastic. But within anything, there is a sliver of nefarious, difficult evil. And so I've got a piece in me. I think that's why I'm against this so much, is because I know that I could be like this. Mm-hmm. So I can see that it's dangerous. That's why I want to say it.
Sure.
So another one is the France Prime Minister Macron, mm-hmm. The Canadian Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Finance Chrystia Freeland, and half of Canadian Parliament. That's what Klaus Schwab says. He boasted half of Canadian Parliament is now part of the World Economic Forum. So my question to you is, you the listener, how much of the USA representatives are part of that? How much of the Massachusetts State Senate and representatives are part of that? Because it can spread, just like that oil I was talking about earlier, it'll spread very slowly and build up. Another person here in the United States government is the U.S. Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg. He ran for president a few years ago. Why was he so young and running for president? Because he was allowed to run because he had already been vetted as a member of this World Economic Forum. And now, also a guy running for prime minister in the UK is Rishi Sunak. He's running for prime minister. He wants CBDC, central bank digital currency, which means elimination of cash, elimination of freedom. Look, people say that word. It's just so easy to say, and it means a lot to many people. But really what it is the elimination of your individual ability to function in society as a person who has feeling and genuine liberty. Because when you remove cash, mm-hmm. everything that you buy and sell and own is tracked and known about and can be turned off. Mm-hmm. You can, if you do something that somebody doesn't like, your money is turned off. Mm-hmm. That is what's going to happen with CBDC. Cash must not be removed. Cash will never be removed. Please don't laugh. It's so important.
You're a big proponent of what is this thing called? Crypto and Bitcoin. Isn't that
taking away
cash anyway?
No, that's very different. Cryptocurrencies is the opposite of CBDC, because CBDC is very controlled and can be specified for a very specific item. For example, you have $10 for apples this month, but not peaches.
No, that's just a scenario.
You have $10 for Kraft macaroni and cheese, but not for kale
or onions.
But you
can do the same thing with crypto. Can limit how much someone has access to and what they can do. I mean, maybe you don't do it now, but it's possible.
Well, it is tracked to some degree, but it is not limited in any way to goods and services. So I can send I can send a Bitcoin to someone in Nairobi, and it'll still work as money.
Yeah, yeah, but that same way that you, the same way you can send it, someone can put it such that you can only use X amount of Bitcoin to do this thing, and only Y for this, and you can't do any other thing. Like, it's possible, because it's all electronic, and someone's controlling that somehow. Don't you think?
But anyone can use Bitcoin, and it's not limited to be turned off. Like we saw in Canada, people donated to those truckers who were marching across Canada to protest the draconian fascist maneuvers from Justin Trudeau. And Justin Trudeau ordered these the credit companies mm-hmm. to turn off that money that had been sent to them through the equivalent of PayPal. Wasn't exactly mm-hmm. PayPal, it was a digital transfer of wealth. Mm-hmm. So that same scenario can happen with central bank digital currencies.
Okay.
Your money can be turned off for any reason.
But that same scenario can happen today with cash anyway.
No, it can't, because I can give cash to anybody for anything.
Cash. Okay, well, not with cash.
That's the point, is that cash must be preserved. Cash must always exist. It cannot be removed. I know you're laughing because I'm so strong-minded.
No, I understand. But like, if you're still using banking systems, somehow that money can be limited.
Exactly. And it can. And like you mentioned with Trudeau, he shut down the banks of people who went to a rally he didn't like. And that can definitely happen. So when you give your money to the bank, it's not entirely yours. They can freeze the account anytime they want.
Exactly. That's already happening
today. Right,
but
you can't do that with Bitcoin.
And you can't do it with cash in your hand.
Right.
I can still, I can keep $10,000 in my house and live for a year if I really need to. I can't do that if I put it all in the bank.
Right.
And I was deemed to be, for some reason, a threat to whatever mm-hmm. kind of, human sociological environment there is.
And I'd just like to say to any listeners out there, every time you use Uber, every time you use like a self-checkout or a cashless kiosk, you're contributing to this system. So like when I go to the grocery store, McDonald's, I always make sure that I get checked out by a real person. And sometimes they'll be like, oh, we have this automated kiosk, and I'd be like, no, I want to get served by a real person. And they kind of look at me like, oh, why? And I'm like, I don't tell this to them, but I'm doing you a favor here. I'm trying to keep you employed. I'm trying to make it so you're not being replaced by a machine. And I think a lot of people don't exactly realize the implications of a lot of these things, you know, when they scoot around in an Uber or swipe their card on a mobile scooter in one of those cities or something like that.
Yes, because I remember back in the 60s, somebody asked the CIA director what would be the most ideal way for you to track a population. And he said, well, we'd get some kind of electronic device to track all purchases. And then you have the credit card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's an ideal starting point. But we all know, as Julian Assange, the great hero, mm-hmm. Julian Assange, the guy should have a head next to Teddy Roosevelt on Mount Rushmore, because he is one of the modern prophets and one of the modern great heroes of this society. Julian Assange for head of the United Nations. And also Edward Snowden, but he's a little too nerdy.
I thought you like nerds.
I do. I feel an antipathy towards nerds. I'm not very attracted to nerds because that's what I think I am. But I'm trying not to be. Mm-hmm. Why do I try not to be?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Yeah. What's wrong with nerds?
Nothing. Except
they don't know how to socially interact.
That's the thing. You need to be able to be social. The thing is, nerds get punched on. You know, nerds get... nerds get the short end of the stick, whereas the big tough guys take care of
things. You know what it is?
What is it?
I think it's ignorance is bliss.
Yes.
Know when you don't know stuff, then you can be loud, and you can be loud. And when you know things, then you know how much you still don't know.
Yes.
And in most cases, you don't want to say anything.
Yeah. Yeah, ooh. That's why the people who were the most scared were the ones who were yelling the first.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, moving on. You know, the people who are in the World Economic Forum are trying to instigate a worldwide technocratic control grid using central bank digital currencies and using the elimination of bodily privacy and the sovereignty of you to do your own thing. You know, the acceptability of you to know what's best for your body. And it just can't be allowed to go on. So really what you have to understand is as a listener, as anybody, is just there's these forces out there, but you have to be able to see it. And how can you see it? I mean, I haven't watched TV for 8 years, so it's hard to, progress that. But I think you can get there faster. First thing, just stop watching TV, mm-hmm. and then stop eating chemicals. Buy just fresh food, and cook it yourself, and see what happens. And get up early, and do good things. Do good things for yourself. Don't do the bad things. Do the good things. But that's easy to say. I mean, what can you do? I mean, but as someone who was going down that trajectory, and I changed it myself, it takes a long time. But you really have to do it. But anyway, I'm getting off the point. We were talking about more about the World Economic Forum. Mm-hmm. Now these people who have gone through the classes of Klaus Schwab, and he seems to wield and that's what I was going to say, mm-hmm. is that here at Tufts last semester I took two classes in the management department, and both of them had a very strong World Economic Forum component to them.
Interesting.
One of them was a class called the Age of Innovation, or Leadership in the Age of Innovation, I think it was called, something like that, and it was only a 7-week class, and each week we did certain amount of things, and then the last week was basically an interview with a guy who they just talked about World Economic Forum for the whole 20 minutes.
Wow.
And how great it was.
Yeah.
And to me, that just was inappropriate.
Yeah.
And then the second class that I took after that was something about forward planning or planning for the future in a business environment.
Mm-hmm.
These were outside of my major because I was a Master's of Science student, but I wanted to take some business classes.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounded great. So the first class of this class, the professor showed us that this is required reading, the Council on Foreign Relations book. What's their magazine? They put out a magazine every month. It's not The Economist, although The Economist is part of that ecosystem.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was part of the required reading for that class. And this professor said he had also spoken at the World Economic Forum.
Wow.
So my mind is that the World Economic Forum has its tendrils and suckers in every little part of important colleges in this country.
No, for
sure. So sure, on the West Coast, but here on the East Coast, if Tufts is part of it, then of course, what
Harvard,
else is there?
MIT probably.
Princeton, yeah. Dartmouth, things like that, Yale. Yeah. So the idea is that it gets insidious, and what better way to start teaching people how to be interested in the World Economic Forum is when they are young and below, say, age of 25,
mm-hmm.
and not aware of how things work in the world to a strong degree, and have not been made aware of these things. So we have to be aware of these things, and the way that it comes in is very tricky, because the professor who spoke at the World Economic Forum said to me, well, I spoke there, but it just seemed to me like a big group of people who were very full of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And to my mind, that means that, you know, if people are insecure, that means they're full of themselves. And so if they're insecure, they want to belong somewhere. And maybe when you get to be a certain level of wealth, that you don't belong somewhere anymore, and you have friends who are doing some other thing, and you slowly start to get into this group, and then eventually you're in.
Mm-hmm.
But what you don't know is that, for example, in the same way that you get into Scientology, what you don't know is that Scientology at the very end is a big scam, and you think that they make you think that when you die, you're going to get your own planet. in the universe somewhere, because it was all invented by a science fiction guy who had diarrhea of the mouth and couldn't stop typing. L. Ron Hubbard just dreamed up Scientology out of nothing, and now it's become a gigantic money maker and con. Mm-hmm. It's a con machine, and that's what World Economic Forum could be, is a con machine for people who are supposedly rich and supposedly powerful, but don't have anything else to do on this little earth of theirs. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, we have to be aware of it and to cut it down.
Yeah. Well, I know I was talking to a professor 2 years back now. I think they were from Southern University, New York, and he was gloating about how he would go to China and they would give him, like, the celebrity treatment, like they'd see his little card and they'd cut him right to the front of the line, and he was bragging about it. And I'm like, well, you sure they're not stealing your research? He's like, oh no, they assure me everything. And I'm like, well, that's what China says, but what China says they do is very different from what they actually do. But, you know, we see China buying all sorts of professors and politicians here in America, and it almost seems like, you know, they're hollowing out the country from the inside, just so, like, in 10, 20 years, America's not going to be able to compete economically with China anymore.
That's interesting. Go on with that. I haven't heard that idea before.
Well, I don't know. Just that China, you know, I think Dianne Feinstein's, like, personal driver was a Chinese national. It looked like they were a spy. Yeah, and then some politician, I forget his name.
But you know, I think, sorry to cut you short, but I think that's, it's as much a China problem as it is an American problem.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that.
Okay, at least we agree. But just to expand a little bit more is, yes, China is sending people over. I've had stories, or I've read stories of students who come here to study or do research, but they really are being sponsored by the Chinese government, and so they're just trying to steal knowledge,
for sure,
and you know, take it back. But then on the flip side, my observation of a lot of American kids is a lot of people don't want to do the hard stuff.
Yep.
Everyone wants to dance on TikTok and become an influencer. Mm-hmm. And in another 10, 15 years, that's not going to matter. What's going to matter is who's creating this platform. That's the person who owns. The person who has the data controls what goes on. And I think that's what China is investing in. And America is eating that shit up.
Yes. No, for sure.
Happily.
No. Don't say that. But the thing is that when China is taking this, it seems innocuous because the students are coming here to learn. Mm-hmm. But who's to know where they're actually going to go? But they're also just, isn't science and knowledge supposed to be free? Shouldn't we be telling everybody everything there is so that they can rise to their greatest capabilities? So they can just get to the enlightenment that we're all searching for?
Certainly. But if the government's behind this, if the government is sending you to go somewhere and learn this particular thing or figure out how they do it there and come back and, you know, help us build something that, I don't know what that something's going to be, but, you know, that we can use to collect their data, like, problem.
Yeah, that's been going on forever, though. I mean, espionage in many ways for many things. But how can it be? How in the future can the U.S. work together with that? You just have to keep making new things. The parents will guide the smart parents will guide their kids away from the meaningless stuff and basically and not give them a cell phone until they're 18.
Well, good luck with that. These days, parents are using their kids as money making tools. Have you heard of that?
Well, that's a little extreme. There's always those stage moms who want to live through their kids because they never had their own success. So it's a story of, like, delayed gratification through the moms. Okay, so now let's continue on talking about what might happen under a one-world technocratic government. Because I know it might seem far-fetched, but you have to understand where it might go in order to fight against it. Now, look, I was just up in the lakes in New Hampshire, and I mean it's a type of paradise if you're in the forest, and there's beautiful water and so many birds and great wildlife and fantastic views. But how does any of this affect that? But, you know, and the question is, it really won't, because it's all in the human mind. Mm-hmm. But what it will affect is you when you're older, and your kids and their kids. And what has to be done is what has been done throughout the history, is to forcibly work against what is obviously a evil technocratic plan. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the what could happen here is the end goal. Well, what actually is the end goal is to have a society with own nothing and be happy. So you won't own a house. You'll rent a small apartment. There was a gigantic building plan put together for a college campus in California, and they said we'll give you all the money to build it, but you can basically build this dormitory for free, but you have to build it exactly the way we're building it. There was one entrance and exit, one door. It was a giant cube, a block on each side. It was about 10 or 20 stories. Each floor had basically a closet-sized room as big enough for a bed and a desk. The bathrooms were at the end of the hall, and there was one lounge with windows looking out. All the rest of that space within that block was taken up by tiny little rooms, mm-hmm. and they had a light that was a multi-functional, multi-wavelength light that mimicked the sun. Mm-hmm. So hundreds of rooms have no windows. And this was a dorm that is actually proposed to be being built. And the reason that is being built, or wants to be built, is to get the kids who are going to college used to living in a tiny little place like that, so that when they get older, they think that that's okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if people have seen the movie Dread, the new-ish, it came out like maybe 5-6 years ago now. The Judge Dredd movie had a Mega City 1 where you'd have like thousands of people stacked in these like tight apartments, and it was like a, you know, Soviet era like block, like stacked on top of each other. And then the whole city was just several of these giant block cities like right next to each other, and just really compact. And I suspect that is the type of design, you know, they want us to be accustomed to in the future, so that you don't have private transportation, you don't have enough money to buy your own food, you're totally reliant on these services that most likely you're going to have to go into debt to even afford anyway, and that just adds a further layer of control over your life. That's where I suspect we're going.
I tend to agree with that, because some of what these movies for dystopian futures are is what's called predictive programming. Mm. Predictive programming is a psychological method to gradually ingratiate difficult ideas into society so that eventually they are accepted as acceptable. Predictive programming can be seen definitely in Blade Runner, mm-hmm. Dread, like you talked about, and Minority Report, mm-hmm. with Tom Cruise, also a Philip K. Dick story, I think.
Yes.
And so in Minority Report, there's the precogs who can predict crime, so the police go to arrest these people who haven't even created crime yet. That is because these so-called psychics are predicting that you might create a crime.
Right.
So what does that sound like to you? That sounds like a giant Nazi situation,
yeah, sure.
Like a giant fist over your head. Mm-hmm. It has to be eliminated from the awareness so that it can't be seen as something acceptable. Another part of predictive program, well, I got off topic here into psychology, but another part of predictive programming is to also make it seem like it's okay to have, like, you know, actions against young children. I can't even bring myself to really talk about it. And also, like, cannibalism. Like eating humans. Like these things just seem like I can't even verbalize it. Even closing my eyes, I can't verbalize talking about these things. But there are there's stories I've seen that will make it seem like, well, it's kind of okay if you're a pedophile, which is a complete disgustingly psychologically ruining situation, because that means that this story is trying to make you think that that's okay, right, when you know that it's not. And anybody with a little bit of soul will move away from that idea really quick. And the same thing with eating human flesh, which is like, it seems strange. And from a conceptual point of view, it's kind of like, well, I guess maybe you'd have to do that if you were the Donner Party. But nobody would, in their right mind, ever would think that that's a viable option.
Yeah.
Because you'll get mad cow disease, honestly.
Yeah, prion diseases,
Yeah, because that's how you get the really bad diseases, is by eating the flesh from your own species. That's what happens with cows, and that's how they get mad cow disease. So anyway, this is part of predictive programming that makes you think that things are okay by spreading little stories that make it seem like things are all right. So that's here through creating the idea that cash should not be used for transactions. Unfortunately, Massachusetts has a law that requires cash to be accepted anywhere there is a transaction. So any store that does not take cash, you're in trouble. That's what just happened with the Red Sox. John Henry owns Boston.com and the Boston Globe. He also owns the Red Sox. This season, they tried to go cashless in Fenway, but I was just there a couple of weeks ago. You can still pay cash for your Cracker Jack. So that law in Massachusetts has stood, and it's very important because it must stay. There must never, cash must never be removed. And when you laugh, it takes the sting out of it. But
no, I agree. You know, if you want to pay cash and you live in Massachusetts, you know, demand your rights. You know, demand that they accept it.
Okay, so that's a little off topic there, but let's continue on with. First, at this time, I have to say this is 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, and we're on here until just before 8 o'clock. So thanks for listening, everybody. Continuing on with the world technocratic government, a test case just occurred. Now, Sri Lanka is an island economy, and it was forced into revolution in order to install a fascist-style so-called president in order to initiate countrywide lockdowns in Sri Lanka and turn it into a complete locked up controlled society. And that has been a plan from the beginning, because they created food shortages, and therefore they created unrest and protests. And then you probably saw the pictures on the news. There was hundreds of thousands of people just surrounding the presidential house, and the president left, and he resigned, and they brought in a new president. Except that guy now turned into a extremely fascist style governor. So I think that is a test case to see how humans react in the situation of increasingly agitation environments, and then being made to have no way out. You have no way out. What's your way out? Well, we'll just go after this guy, because you think that this guy is the problem. And then that guy goes away, and then a worse guy comes in. So, and then there's fuel rationing and food rationing. You can't have as much food or fuel that you want. I think that this is a way that is being tested so that the rest of this can be done in other parts of the world. Because supposedly they keep saying that food shortages are coming. We don't see it around here, but...
Oh, it's coming.
Now, why do you think it's coming?
Well, in Kenya, it's already there. Because...
How?
Half of the country is arid, so that land is not being used for any form of food production. Kenya relies a lot on Ukraine and Russia for grain. And so with the whole Russia-Ukraine war, grains are not being exported. And so the little that's getting there is not enough to take care of everybody. Fertilizers come from Ukraine as well. And that's also not getting, Kenyans also not getting enough of that. So there's no fertilizers, or not enough fertilizers. And so the yield is lower, and there's no grain. So people are actually dying of hunger.
Wow.
Yeah, and I would agree. It's only a matter of time before it comes here, especially because, you know, the way America is, the supply chain is designed, we have just-in-time delivery. So, like, you know, a lot of these places, especially in the cities, they don't make their own food. They have to rely on it being shipped in through, you know, trucks and trains and whatnot. And if, you know, that supply chain is disrupted, then all these urban areas are not going to have the food that they're used to. So I think we are going to see it, but it's going to take a while. I think it's going to take a while to come to America.
It's kind of here. I was at Whole Foods the other day, and they are not giving out wasabi. And before, they'd have like a huge container, and you could pick as much sachets as you want. But now they're like, due to supply chain issues, we are no longer offering this, and if you need extra, you should ask for it.
Oh, so they're just not allowing endless wasabi taking.
Right.
Oh. Well, that's not something you really want a lot of anyway.
I mean, it's just an example.
Exotic product,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, to some extent, I don't believe that there would naturally be a food shortage, because for, you know, hundreds of, 50 years, there's been enough food for everybody that wants it. In fact, there's been extra food. We throw away how much of our food? 30%?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So that's why I think there may not be, because if the supply chain is actually in place, they know how many chickens to raise every year for the people who want them, and how many, you know, cows to kill for the cuts of meat that people want, and how many cows to milk to get all the milk. In fact, they throw away milk that's made too much of, because, so the cows will always make enough just in case.
But they are trying to cut down the cow numbers for the environment.
Are they?
Yeah, they're saying two things. They're saying, like, the methane is too much polluting, and then also, like, they...
Who is saying this? Because I heard of that, but I was like, this is a joke.
No, I've been reading articles that, like, it's just been circulating where they're saying, oh, the cows produce too much gas, they're, like, red meat's unhealthy, we got to cut down the amount of cows we have, and it's like...
Well, that's another condition in New Zealand. Jacinda Ardern, a World Economic Forum member who also instigated the worst lockdowns in the world for the pointless, non-serious and not dangerous COVID-19. She was over the top in this regard. She wants to start taxing cow farts in New Zealand.
I heard something like that.
So if however many cows you have, it's like a carbon offset idea, is that however many cows you have, you have to pay a certain amount per cow to offset the methane emissions.
Right.
And that's also similar to what's happening in Netherlands. The government is enforcing a tax on farmers, so that the farmers will basically go out of business because of this random new tax that somebody thought was important. And the result of that will be that the farmers lose their land, and that they will no longer be making food for other people. So what is the cause of the food shortage in that case? It's a government mandate.
Right.
Who is running that government? It doesn't seem like they would be helping the people if they are trying to do this that will harm the people. So they're not. The government is no longer for the people. The government is against the people.
Well, that's just one example. I'm afraid you're using one, I don't want to call it an edge case, but one example to make a conclusion. Because just like I told you, the situation in Kenya, this is green. This has got nothing to do with methane and carbon dioxide being released into the environment. This is just farming. And so, yeah, supply chain does have an issue. And the thing is, before, I guess, COVID and the war, the world was very interconnected, right? And so farmers in Brazil are relying on fertilizers in Ukraine, and that has to be shipped across Middle East, whatever. And now countries are starting to become very, people are starting to become very nationalist. It's like we this people and you those people. And so all those interconnections are starting to, you know, kind of have cracks. And that's what's causing, I think certainly there's going to be an effect from that. Because then now I'll start charging you so much higher for, you know, look at, what do you call this country? Look at Saudi Arabia and the oil. Mm-hmm. Like right now, gas prices are insane here because...
Well, that's because it's price gouging on behalf of the oil companies, mm-hmm. of the gas companies. They're charging a lot more because they can. Every summer, the gas price goes up right on cue, right at Memorial Day. It starts going up, mm-hmm. and it stays high all summer in America. And then right on cue, right on Labor Day, it goes down again. Why? Because people are on vacation then, and they drive the most. So the gas companies will make the most profit during that time if they raise the prices that much.
No, but that's because gas is... I mean, anyway, this is all a finite resource, right? And if a lot of people want it, then definitely... market demand, whatever, market forces just calls it. Whoever can pay for it is the person that's going to get it. And so,
yes, but in a market with a set supply curve, there's no need for higher prices when you understand your market. If there's a change in price for demand, you're not a good company because you can't plan your market.
You're a good company because then you're looking at, You know when to make them... Okay, well, I guess the whole idea of profits is also questionable.
Right.
But it's all about when can we make the profit. Because, I mean, if a lot of people want it and you only have X amount of it, then somehow there has to be a balance, right? Because not everyone's going to get it.
Yes, but in the scenario that we're talking about oil, it's a complicated... robust kind of aware market, and they know exactly where the gas is going, mm-hmm. except during the time of low driving. Mm-hmm. But except this time around, there is not low driving. Everybody's driving the same amount as they always have before. Mm-hmm. So if gas prices are up all around the world, there's no other reason than collusion, because mm-hmm. it's not a individually market set situation. If every market was different, then that would be logical. Mm-hmm. If everything goes up all at once, then it's collusion. Mm-hmm. It's a manufactured problem. It's basically in a hurricane, the 7-Eleven sells bottled water for $10 mm-hmm. a bottle, right? Mm-hmm. But normally they sell it for $1. That's what's happening. The companies just exorbitantly blow up the prices. Yeah. All right.
You really think? Yeah, yeah. To disagree with you on that.
Okay.
And that's because, just taking the example with Hurricane and 7-Eleven, why does water become $11 at that time? Because there's a need for it,
supply,
right?
Supply and demand. But it's also human nature to gouge and get as much profit as you can. If I own a company, look, I've got it in me. Look. It's a natural disaster. Oh gosh, I've got I got chocolate bars. Everybody wants chocolate bars. Mm-hmm. So $5 a chocolate bar. Well, wait a second. We're in Cambridge. That's not a large price. How about for a garbage Hershey bar? Yeah, $5 for a garbage Hershey bar. What a rip off.
Yeah.
So you can do that. But if it's not a hurricane and you're the only person selling chocolate in town, then you can price whatever you want.
Yeah.
And also, cars have the car manufacturers have been working together with the oil manufacturers to keep gas mile per gallon efficiency of car engines to 30 miles a gallon or lower. Mm-hmm. That's I mean, you can. There was a guy who invented a 100 mile per gallon oh. gasoline car, mm-hmm. but he was killed.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah, and his invention was eliminated. So that's you know. The best thing you can do is have a solar panel on the roof of your house to power your house and charge your car, and then you're not dependent on gasoline, no. Natural gas, or electricity made from coal or natural gas or whatever. Well, all right, so we've moved on from a lot of the things that I wanted to talk about. That seemed like something pointless, but
it's not.
But it seems very simple. But it's
That's because we don't have also. Think about it. I think maybe we don't have the full context. That's why maybe it looks simple.
It seems simple. Every time I've seen a graph of oil prices over 20 years, they always show it in a very condensed way so that you can't really pick out any kind of pattern. But if you stretch it out and you look at it, it's very clear that on Memorial Day it goes up, Labor Day it goes down. That's in the same way that in the wintertime your natural gas price goes up and in the summertime it goes down, because the company is making the most money off of you when you're buying the most of it. It's a total scam, because they say that it's harder to deliver gas then, but you're not doing a good job as a company if you can't deliver gas when the customer wants it on the regular basis. Why else would it be, in order to make profit? I mean, it's not a public company, it's a private company.
But
so they can make as much profit as they want.
To do, make profit. It's not a charity.
Yeah. Well, for some businesses, I agree. For most businesses, I agree. But for some businesses, it's the scamming and the ruining of people's goodwill to being aware of these things. It just shouldn't be done. Why would you charge so much money for an essential, which is heat and electricity? It should be privatized. Whoa. I mean, sorry. It should be turned into a public utility.
Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, no, the government's not going to do that.
I'm going way off. I really have no idea what I'm talking about in that particular regard. All right. So this is 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. The show is every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. I want to thank both of you for being here. We've got about 10 minutes left in the show. And I think what I really want to do is talk about something that people might not think about at all. And that's the role that the secret societies play in American society. And around
secret
the world.
Societies.
Secret societies. They're secret.
Who are those?
It's so secret, I can't talk about it. Did you know George Bush Jr., or what's his name? George W. Bush?
George W.
He was running for president in 2004, I think it was. And also John Kerry, former senator of Massachusetts and secretary of state under Obama. He was also running for president in 2004. And they were both members of the Skull and Bone Society of Yale College. They both went to Yale. They both were members of Skull and Bone Society. And they were both running for president at the same time. Tim Russert was the CNN news anchor, and he asked both of them, so what can you, I understand that you and, he said to John Kerry, so I understand both you and George Bush are running for president, and you're both members of Skull and Bones. And what can you tell me about that? And John Kerry said, well, it's so secret, I can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean from when somebody admits that they're part of it and then says they can't talk about it? That engenders the awareness that there are things like secret societies, but it also engenders the awareness that this is something beyond your ability to understand or know, or the common person should just not be thinking about that.
Yeah.
But guess what? It does exist.
Yeah.
And it's not that weird.
No.
It's just like any other fraternity that you probably might be a part of. Except that this one involves a weird hazing ritual. And it takes young people when they're very strongly open to experiences and very open to forming new connections. And it wraps them indelibly to their soul to be connected to this society, to Skull and Bones, for example. I'll just use that because it's the most, like, biggest kind of boogeyman. But any of the other secret societies that you know about, say Scroll and Key is also at Yale. What's the other one at Yale? Book and Cloak, I think, or something like that. Book and Feather or Scribe. Anyway, but there's other ones. Harvard doesn't have them as much, but there are some there. But it's a big part of Yale's life.
Right.
And there's other colleges around the country that also have them. So part of the initiation ritual is that it binds these young minds and souls to such a strong degree. It basically creates a near-death experience. The 20-year-old person, you're always around 20, 21 when you're initiated. You're initiated into a near-death experience. So you literally think you are going to die at that moment in that clubhouse around those people, and you're going to die. And then you don't die. Mm. And you are relieved.
Hmm.
And then you are so thankful to these people who have saved your life. And then you realize, I give my life to these people.
Mm-hmm.
I am now bound to them with my heart and soul. And that is what lasts for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You are reborn into skull and bones.
Yep.
You're not reborn into Jesus or whatever. You're reborn into scroll and key. And you are now one of them forever.
Yep.
So every year you get 12 new people. The seniors induct the juniors. And so that means that for every year there's 12 people. Mm-hmm. So how long do people live? They live to be 70. Yeah. So that's about 50 years of time that you're alive.
Yep.
So 50 times 12, like 600 people.
Yeah.
So there's 600 people supposedly alive in the world today that are skull and bones people. They're also not only men. They're men and women.
Yeah.
And so these people, you know, what's the percentage of people that will really go forward with the cause?
Yeah.
Maybe 50%. So maybe there's like 300 people in the world who are really powerful enough to be connected with a group of people to make things happen.
Yeah.
How do you sign up?
You have to be chosen.
How do you get chosen? What do you got
to
do?
You first have to go to Yale. Then you have to have been born into a highly placed society family who is either extremely rich or wealthy or well served in their past. So maybe the dad was an ambassador or a captain of industry or a CEO or has connections to a deeper, darker religion, like some kind of worship of something that is beyond what we normally see as plebs in this regular day.
Oh, so I'm late. I was hoping I'd join and come back and tell you guys, you know.
Well, if anyone thinks that these are nice people, let's not forget that they have Chief Geronimo's skull there in Yale, and it's a big part of their rituals, and that, you know, the family has sued them and asked to get, hey, can we get the remains of our ancestor back? And they're like, no. It's part of our like tradition and whatnot. So, you know, if we're trying to honor Native American heritage, let's keep that in mind too.
Yeah. Well, that's like a black magic kind of part of the ritual. And so these secret societies do exist. And then not only are they like the very small edge of it, but within other parts of the government, parts of the government are really run by Ivy League types, but a lot of them are related to these secret societies. So, for example, Skull and Bones, George W. Bush, the recent president, George H.W. Bush, his dad, he was also in Skull and Bones. His dad, Prescott Bush, was also in Skull and Bones. And George H.W. Bush, he breezed through Yale in two or three years, graduated, and then started Zapata Offshore Oil Company in the Caribbean, so that he was a cover company for the CIA. He was part of the early part of the CIA, and it was called the OSS at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But his company was called Zapata, and they ran out of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed him cover to train operatives in order to invade Guantanamo Bay. That was part of his operation.
Mm.
And he was a young kind of a young CIA operative trying to prove himself, trying to do a good operation.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kennedy put the squash on Guantanamo Bay.
Mm.
And so then later in November 1963, George Bush was in Dallas on that day, along with, you know, maybe 10 other people at least who were involved with that. And so then later on, what happens to George Bush? He's sent to China in the late 60s, when Henry Kissinger was part of Nixon's program. Oh, by the way, Nixon was Prescott Bush's guy.
Mm.
Joe Kennedy had John Kennedy. Prescott Bush had Nixon.
Oh, interesting.
And so then Bush worked for Nixon. That's why a lot of the same people, Dick Cheney worked for Nixon, then he worked for George W. Bush and George H.W. Bush. These people are part of the long-term continuance of psychopaths.
Yeah. Yep.
Just like the World Economic Forum is like the visible part of that. There's also the invisible part of the psychopaths that are perpetuating their psychopathic tendencies. And these are done through through well-known psychological techniques in order to ingratiate the people who may not otherwise have been psychopaths. For example, maybe George W. Bush was not a psychopath before he was in Skull and Bones. But the adults have taken that into account because, you know, if I was a psychopath and I wanted my kid to be sure to be a psychopath, I'd figure out a way to make sure he would be a psychopath through techniques and psychological manipulation. So that's what these rituals do is they're designed to break you into, or at least bypass all of that and get you into the rebirth zone where you're fully involved to this basically like a cult. So the point is that these things do exist and that there are levels of it, and you have to be aware that it can exist. So now what do we do when we know it exists? Like, what about me? I'm just a nobody. Mm-hmm. What can I do when I move up into the world and I know that this exists? Do I kiss ass? Do mm-hmm. do I play the game? Do I make waves? I mean, how can you know? How can you know what to do? I think what happens is if you don't play the game, then you're sent out and you're just not allowed to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. But if you do play the game, then you become completely ingratiated in it, and you become you. So say, for example, you are not in the society, but you want to be a part of it. Then you allow yourself to be compromised mm-hmm. through having pictures of yourself with girls from Jeffrey Epstein's house.
Sure.
So, I mean, if the CIA is run by large scale secret society types of people, then they need to use different ways to keep people under control.
Right.
So this guy Epstein would be the pimp for these higher up people to basically turn these other people into willing members, because if you don't, then we'll show you all these sex pictures from there.
But I mean, it starts small. First, they're like, oh, you know, take a bribe here, like you turn a blind eye here, you abuse your authority to do a favor for us. So it doesn't always just start right there, but it's a slow process and slowly escalates from there for sure.
Yeah, and before you know it, you're kind of in there. It goes like little by little.
Definitely.
Wow, that really got to a place. So I wasn't expecting to get to that place, but as so often as these things happen, when you open up that Niagara Falls, it just comes right out. But so the thing is, these are not secret anymore, because this is now a time when people have been able to understand the larger machinations of how things work. And you know, once you can be aware of that, then you are free to be yourself and free to live and give your energy and happiness to other people, and you can give your love and pleasant vibes to everyone else, and you can spread that love in the world. You can decide which direction you want to spread things, and just by being aware of things, you can then choose the direction that you want to go. And I don't know about you, but I want to choose love and happiness.
Yeah, for sure. Just honesty and understanding, you know.
What do you think?
I agree. With good hair. I totally agree.
Let's choose love and happiness and understanding.
That's right.
Let's make the world a better place by doing it every single second of the day and to everybody we meet.
For sure.
And to be positive and outgoing and to because the next day the sun is rising and we're going to have an even better day then.
Yep.
I want to thank you for being here very much.
Yeah, it was a pleasure being here.
And also, Becky with the good hair, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
This is 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. This show runs every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. this summer. And I want to thank you for listening. We'll be back next week, maybe live, maybe not. And stay tuned for excellent music. 91.5 WMFO Medford.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. I came out in the 11th grade. Nobody was embracing you. Kids were cruel. It was very difficult to be gay. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
The hard part was determining that I was going to do it, but I definitely didn't do it alone.
At age 30, with the help of her mentor, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
I have a mentor, Maria. She convinced me to continue my education and to finish what I started to get my diploma. Just never judges. She's a true role model. If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, go get it. You can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about
petting and burning.
I'd probably talk about
petting and burning.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school.
Petting and burning.
Clothes.
You'd be amazed.